Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
I was on vacation the night that she went missing, and I remember standing there at around the same time, and I had my phone in my hand, and I looked down at my phone, and I had this overwhelming urge to call my mom. And I didn't, because I didn't want to have to tell her I didn't get into graduate school.
On the evening of Tuesday, March 28th, 2017, 50-year-old Deborah Puente met some friends from work at a Longhorn Bar and Grill in the Grantville neighborhood of San Diego, California. Surveillance videos showed Debbie leaving the restaurant and getting into her car. Her friends are the last known people to see Debbie. A week went by before Debbie was reported missing. The following day, her car was located in Ocean Beach, about 10 miles from where she was last seen. Her purse was still inside, and there were several parking tickets left on the windshield. Debbie's family canvassed the area, posting flyers and speaking to locals, but no trace of Debbie has ever been found. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 119 of The Vanished, Deborah Puente's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Debbie is the mother of four grown children, and her daughter Ashley contacted me a few months ago to see if I could cover her mom's story. Ashley lives in Colorado, but has been traveling to California to help search for her mom. Like many stories you've heard on this show, this one is full of complex relationships. In order to understand how Debbie ended up where she was in life at the time of her disappearance, you have to go back many years. When I spoke to Ashley, she gave me some background information about her mom.
So I'm from San Diego. My mom was there her whole life. She was kind of a rebellious teenager in the sense that she got addicted to drugs pretty early and just got a lot and got into a lot of trouble. But she did manage to get sober and get help. So I feel like she just always kind of struggled with addiction. Even after she beat it, she was a functional alcoholic later on in life. So she kind of just struggled with that. She had kids really young. Young for her. She got pregnant with my sister when she was 20. And my sister was born with really severe disability. And I think my mom, she was a great mom when we were kids. But as my sister's needs got bigger, my mom started sort of backing off more and more. She always really loved my sister, but she didn't have that caretaking sort of selfless need that my sister's care needed. And so that came between my parents, and they got divorced when I was 13, my sister was 14. And, you know, we have a younger sister too and a younger brother. So we all had strained relationships with her. She was a really cool mom to us. You know, we got to do whatever we wanted, so we wanted to live with her and be around her because she was cool and we didn't really understand the aspect of the other things that were happening as far as, you know, not taking care of my sister the way she should have been.
Even though Ashley and her siblings saw their mom as a cool mom, as they got older, they began to see her underlying issues, which led them to distance themselves from Debbie.
I think as I got older, and my younger sister and I got older too, it was a lot easier to start seeing how functional of an addict she was. She drank a lot. She hung out with kind of a dark crowd from time to time. So we all just sort of slowly started cutting her out of our lives because it was difficult. Everyone in her life loved her a lot, and her parents and, you know, her kids and her friends, and we tried all sticking by her. And I remember my brother begging her to get help so that he could be in her life. And it wasn't ever something that was like outright that she was necessarily doing wrong. It was just the things that she wasn't doing right, if that makes any sense. It just didn't feel like she was putting in that effort that we needed from her. She was always such a free spirit and just the life of the party and just so much fun. But there was that darker aspect that her kids especially needed more from her that she didn't give us. So I still personally talk to her. I've kind of always been the middle link between, you know, her and other family members, just because I didn't want her to feel completely isolated, and if she ever did make changes, I wanted to be there for her.
Another major issue that caused a divide between Debbie and her family were the relationships that she had with men over the years who were abusive.
She was in abusive relationships after my dad and her got divorced, which was another major kink in her relationship with everyone. And so I really stopped talking to her regularly after one of her boyfriends started throwing plates at her in the kitchen when my husband and I were visiting her. We were meeting him for the first time. And after going out with him, he just started smashing plates when we got home. And I went in there to stop him, and he grabbed me by the neck and pushed me up against the refrigerator and just stared at me like he was trying to scare me, but trying not to kill me at the same time. When she didn't break up with him after that, he actually beat her really badly that night. And we tried really hard to get her help, but she was just stuck in the cycle of abuse. And so that was hard for me because I had to make choices to separate myself, to protect myself and my family. But I kind of had to leave her too, so carry a lot of guilt with that. I think we all carry lots of guilt with her disappearance because we wish we had done things differently, but it's hard when you're in the moment to make the right decisions for yourself and for other people. That was an old boyfriend. She did eventually leave him.
Debbie did have a boyfriend at the time of her disappearance, and that relationship wasn't a healthy one.
Her boyfriend just kept getting younger and younger. The boyfriend that she was with at the time of her disappearance was my younger sister's age. So my mom was 50 and he was 28 or 27. And I think that's just kind of a typical psychological need to take care of people that were her kids' age because her kids weren't in her life anymore. He was a major addict and he had caused her a lot of trouble before. He had stolen money from her. He stole her car, left it at the airport because he used her money to go to Hawaii. I don't know if he physically abused her, but he did definitely abuse her financially and emotionally, just kind of took advantage. And so they were kind of off and on. But she just kept taking him back. And so I emailed her in January last year, 2017, because I got a new job and I needed my immunization records. So I needed some info from her. And I sent her pictures of my dogs because she loves dogs. We talked about her dog, Astro, the Rottweiler mix, so sweet. She emailed me that, you know, they were living together and his brother had moved in and stayed with them too. His brother was also a deadbeat. So in March, I applied for a graduate school and I did not get in last year. So I was really avoiding calling everyone and telling them because they had all been asking me, waiting for me to find out. So I avoided calling my mom because I didn't want to have to deal with telling people over and over. I was on vacation the night that she went missing. And I remember standing there at around the same time and I had my phone in my hand and I looked down at my phone and I had this overwhelming urge to call my mom. And I didn't because I didn't want to have to tell her I didn't get into graduate school.
Ashley told me the timeline that she's been able to put together for the day that her mom disappeared.
She went missing on Tuesday, March 28th, 2017. The last time she was seen, she went out with friends from work to the Longhorn Bar and Grill in a neighborhood called Grantville in San Diego. She worked at the same job for 15 years, very stable. You know, her work loved her. She was very functional alcoholic, so it didn't affect her work very much. So she went out with a couple friends, and there's security footage of her leaving. I think she had one drink. She left the bar, and she told her friends that she was there with, that she had gotten into a fight with her boyfriend that morning. His name's Josh. And that was it. She had it, and she told him that she wanted him to leave and move out, him and his brother. And she said, I'm not coming back until you're out of this house. So she told her coworkers she had a safe place to stay because she didn't want to go home because she had a feeling he hadn't left yet. She had requested the next 2 days off of work, so she requested Wednesday and Thursday off. There was nothing weird that she didn't show up. Friday morning, she didn't show up to work, but her work just thought, they said occasionally, you know, she might come in late or miss a day after vacations. So they thought maybe Debbie just partied too hard and she forgot she didn't request this day off or something.
There was a delay in reporting Debbie missing because her boyfriend didn't notify the police. And her coworkers waited a few days to contact her family and eventually the police. Debbie disappeared on a Tuesday, and she wasn't scheduled to work the next 2 days. So when Friday rolled around and she didn't show up, her coworkers were slightly concerned, but they didn't think too much of it. Her office is closed on the weekend, so Saturday and Sunday passed and nobody noticed that she was missing. Monday rolled around and Debbie still didn't make it to work or call. This is when they decided to contact her family.
They called her parents, my grandparents, and my grandparents said, let's give it one more day for her to show up. And then Tuesday she didn't show up, so they requested a wellness check. And she wasn't home. The boyfriend said he hadn't seen her in a week. So I found out that Tuesday after she went missing. So she had already been gone for a full week before any real things were done to look for her.
Debbie went missing on Tuesday, March 28th, and the following Wednesday, there was a major break in the case.
The police found her car that Wednesday, parked at the beach by Santa Cruz Cove on Santa Cruz and Bacon Street. It was parked illegally in the red. It had tickets on it from Wednesday, the 28th, the morning after she was last seen. At 6 a.m. And it had her purse in it with her wallet and $80 in cash. And it was parked. The Santa Cruz Cove is an area where she did like to hang out in the town of Ocean Beach. And she went there a lot, took us to Ocean Beach a lot as kids too. So it wasn't unusual that she would have gone there to clear her head or,
even hang out with a friend or stay with a friend there. But the specific night that she went missing, the tide was so high at the time in the night that she went missing, where the shore normally was 6 feet deep. And the current was also very strong. So the lifeguards that worked that night that we talked to said anyone who had tried to go down the stairs where her car was parked would have been swept away. Other people have drowned there and gone missing in that area. A woman fell off the cliffs just a couple months before that and was missing for 6 weeks before her body washed up. So that 6 week number was kind of hanging in the air. We were kind of waiting for that, just waiting for her body to wash up, and it never did. Nothing. She still hasn't been found, her body, obviously.
Ashley explained to me the distance between where Debbie was last seen at the Longhorn Bar and Grill and where her car was found in Ocean Beach.
It's in a totally different part of the town. The bar where she was last seen is close to her work, and it's kind of inland. It's 10 miles away, 15-minute drive on the freeway.
Once Debbie's car was located, that gave them a place to search for her. Ashley then made the trip from Colorado to help with the search efforts.
I flew home. I live in Colorado. I flew home the second they called me to tell me they found her car. And as soon as I landed, I had made flyers in the airport, and we went out and had a group of friends and family meet us in Ocean Beach where her car was found, and we posted flyers all over the place. All the news stations came out. She was all over the local news, and Ocean Beach is such an awesome community. They are so nice and just supportive. She still has flyers all around. They still keep them up. And everyone was looking for her. Everyone we talked to was telling us, yes, we've seen it. You know, we hope we're looking out for her. And so that night, we kind of walked around, and someone at the liquor store had said that he had seen her. And he just said it so casually. Oh, yeah, I saw her last week. And my aunts and I just kind of stared at him because we had had a full day of people telling us no and how sorry they were for us and no, no, no. And then this guy just casually, yeah, I saw her. No big deal. He didn't have security cameras. He said he saw her with an older homeless lady just walking around drinking, hanging out in the parking lot of the dog park. And he described the van that the old lady, I guess she was a regular, he described the van that she drives around. We looked for it, but didn't find her. He didn't say exactly what day. He just said, oh, I saw her last week. And the time that we were asking him was a week after she went missing. So it would have been around like the day of that she went missing or in the following days, like that Wednesday or Thursday. So he let us put up a flyer in case she came back. We had a couple of other sightings. We went all the way up into Ramona, which is a mountain town about 45 minutes outside of San Diego. Somebody said that they saw her walking around up there. We posted flyers all over the place, and I'm like checking Facebook 24/7, just looking for updates, and people in Ramona are telling me, I just saw her on this street. And we go and we find this woman that everyone has been telling us they've seen, and it's not her. So it's just more sightings like that that ended up not being her. And that's it, really. We haven't had any leads or any really movement in the case.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. After Debbie disappeared, Ashley was shocked when she went to her mom's home to gather her things.
Her house, when I went to clean it out, was a disaster. It was full of cigarettes, like stale cigarette smoke. There were like burn holes in the couch. There was blood on her mattress, on her sheets, dried blood. And I, first thing I'm thinking is that it's human blood, but it actually ended up being blood from her dog, who was in really bad condition. He was covered in sores from scratching. He had fleas really bad and double ear infections. Her cat wouldn't come out from under the bed. But that's what really broke my heart, was seeing her dog. And I knew that, you know, that was more than just a week of neglect or what, you know, sickness that he had. So I knew that wherever my mom was, whatever condition she was in, she wasn't in the space to take care of her animals. She would have to take care of herself. So I relinquished her animals to local animal shelters. He was a Rottweiler, so I didn't want him to be put down for that. And I didn't know how he'd be because he was so sick. So a Rottweiler rescue group specifically helped us, and they took him in and they paid for all of his care, and he found a forever home last August, and they send me pictures and they just love him so much. And so that's kind of the silver lining in this. I'm such a dog person, so it really broke my heart, and that really made it, like, just added a different layer to the story of the severe sort of neglect that that her animals were getting.
The condition of both Debbie's home and her dog has left Ashley wondering about her mom's mental state at the time of her disappearance.
I do. She really loved her dog a lot. And it's hard for me. That was the hardest part for me, was finding it like that. And it just put a different lens on the situation. You know, she wasn't just out like getting drunk and partying. It was definitely a coping mechanism for the struggles that she was having.
Debbie had mentioned to her friends that she had a safe place to stay the night that she disappeared. This is one of the mysteries of her case. No one knows where she may have been planning to go.
No one said, hey, that was me. She was supposed to come over. She didn't have a cell phone. She had one, but her boyfriend took it and was using it for himself. She didn't have personal email. She wasn't on social media. She was just kind of living the regular life before social media. So there was we have no idea where her safe space was.
I know you're probably wondering about Debbie's boyfriend. Why didn't he report her missing? We know that Debbie did mention that she had a fight with her boyfriend and she said she had a safe place to stay, but she never told anyone where this place was or who she may have planned to stay with. The fact that there had been an argument with her boyfriend makes everyone wonder if she did go back home that night and if something happened there. The police have spoken with her boyfriend.
He said that he hadn't talked to her. So they talked to him the Tuesday after she went missing. He said he hadn't seen her since that week before. He did call her at work to try and find her, and there was a voicemail that he left at work on Friday morning. But he didn't help with the search. He didn't help at all. And, you know, he did this interview for the news because they found out where she lived and they, you know, knocked on the door and he answered. And everyone who watched his interview, like, texted me and called me, like, that dude is creepy. Like, I hope the police are looking into him because everyone who watched it was like, made my skin crawl. Something's not right there. But the police, I mean, still, they haven't found anything. It's so difficult with a missing persons case versus a homicide or something because there's no evidence to show. There's no body. There's nothing to show that, you know, there was no blood in the house or anything like that to show that, like, to charge him or try to, you know, look at it from a different angle. So that's been really hard. The boyfriend did cooperate with police. He did eventually leave the house. He checked in with the detective every day, called her and told her where he was staying for a couple of weeks. And the police didn't feel like he was involved at all.
Even though Debbie clearly had issues that she was dealing with, Ashley is concerned because disappearing is still out of character for her. Debbie struggled with alcoholism, but she also maintained her career for 15 years.
She's never had, you know, an absence like this especially, but at all really from work. So they were really surprised when she just stopped showing up. It's not like, you know, she had her problems in life, but she never disappeared for a year.
One frustrating aspect of this story is that no one knows where Debbie would have gone to stay that night since she didn't want to go home. No one has come forward to say that she would stay with them when she had a fight with her boyfriend. No one has found any communication between Debbie and someone else to set up to spend the night. This made me wonder if she had just said that to her friends so they wouldn't worry about her.
It's hard because I do definitely see her saying that to make them feel that she was safe. And I feel like she was the kind of person, especially in these abusive relationships, where she would just go and either get back together with this person or try to yell at them more and get them to leave. So I can see her going back to her house and trying to deal with the situation however she, you know, wanted to go. But on the same hand, my mom was friends with all kinds of characters and people. So I could see her just stopping at somebody random's house that, you know, we don't really know or planning to and knowing that she would be safe there. And I can see her driving to the beach to clear her mind and, you know, or even get drunk or high or who knows what, because that spot, that cove in particular, is kind of popular for that. So it's hard because I can see it going both ways. I mean, she is making it difficult for the people in her life, her family, to stay through all the things that were happening. But she had other people, other friends. I just don't know.
Another complicating factor with Debbie's case is that she was friends with some people who live a transient lifestyle. It's hard to track these people down. At this point, her family has also lost contact with her boyfriend.
Yeah, I've lost contact with him. I think he used the cell phone that she had until it, you know, it wasn't being paid for, so until they cut off his service. I don't know where he's staying or who he's with. I think he was homeless when he met my mom, or, you know, some kind of, she met him through a friend and he was just kind of crashing on couches. And when he was checking in with the detective, he was telling her every night where he was staying, you know, if he was staying at a different friend's house. So that just kind of gave me the impression that he didn't really have a you know, that's why he was with my mom, because she paid for his drugs. When he interviewed with the police, he told them, I'm an addict. He was straight up with them. I don't know what he was using. I did find needles and those rubber band ties by the bed when I went to clean stuff up. He told the detective Debbie would buy my drugs, but she never did them. She just drank. And that's why he was with her, because she bought his drugs and she gave him a roof over his head, and he stole her money and used it to buy video games. And I haven't talked to him. He hasn't reached out. The last time I talked to him, I called him to ask him what kind of dog food Astro had been eating so that they could, you know, safely switch him over. But he kind of had this like, oh, you know, nobody's calling me, nobody's checking in with me, sort of like, woe is me feeling. But it's just like, you know, can you give us the creeps and we don't want to talk to you and you're not helping. The boyfriend did tell the police some names of some people that they knew in Ocean Beach, but it was like first name, like nicknames, like go find cotton candy, you know, like it was like, oh my God. So we never did find the people that, you know, the transients that he was talking about, like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe they'll know where Deb is. And it was just kind of this wild goose chase of like, you know, the liquor store guy thinks he saw her with a homeless lady. Her transient boyfriend is telling us to go talk to these other transients. And it is a big community of homeless people in Ocean Beach. You know, the weather's great. There's lots of grassy parks. They just hang out. It's kind of part of the culture there. It's definitely, there's some tension there between the residents and the transient population. And, you know, she has a past of taking these people in and of hanging out with them. So I don't think it's far-fetched to think that that's, you know, what she's doing, just surviving like that.
Many people who had known Debbie were unaware of the extent that she was struggling. Her family hasn't said much about what she was grappling with due to the fear that some may no longer help with the search efforts. But Ashley felt like it was time to put it all out there because knowing her issues may help find her mom.
There have been a lot of people on her Facebook page, you know, old friends or friends who had strained relationships or friends who had no idea, you know, this other, because her work didn't really know that she had any of these issues. She was, you know, a perfect model insurance adjuster, aside from, you know, an occasional day where she didn't show up. We have a lot of people who, you know, are supporting her and want to find her, but I think we were really reluctant to kind of bring up this darker history of hers because we didn't want it to shape her case or shape the way that people saw her and their desire to find her. But I do think it's important because there is a mental health aspect to this, and there's a whole path that this could have gone in the sense of, you know, her having some kind of alcohol-induced breakdown or drug-induced breakdown that honestly some of us were just kind of waiting for.
Ashley feels that her mom most likely struggled with mental illness, and that's why she turned to substances as a coping mechanism. Debbie was never willing to seek help or even a diagnosis.
Mental illnesses do definitely run in our family. And I know as a teenager, I really, really begged my mom to get help, to get, you know, a diagnosis. We feel like she might have been bipolar, but she was adamantly against talking to anyone about her business, to opening up about her feelings and her issues. You know, against any kind of medication, opposed to self-medicating. And that was just something that we all kind of knew. And, you know, depression runs in our family too. Just we're all struggling with it. And so I definitely think that she was struggling with undiagnosed issues. And she was coping and she was, you know, she was making it work, but keeping everyone kind of at an arm's distance. But she definitely, she just had one of those quirky personalities too, or she was just the life of the party. But nobody ever really saw, you know, the days that she didn't get out of bed.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. You aren't sleeping and you're stressed out. That's how it was for me, so I cleared out my cabinet and reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. Their deep sleep gummies are amazing. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made from the highest quality clean ingredients. No fluff, no fillers, just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In two non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm. 80% said CBD helped with pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said they slept better with CBD. If you struggle with a health concern and haven't found relief, make the change to CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is a source to trust. I have a 20% discount to get you started. Visit cbdistillery.com and use code VANISHED for 20% off. That's cbdistillery.com, code VANISHED. cbdistillery.com. You often hear families on this show express feeling some level of guilt, whether it's because they wish they had made a phone call or tried harder to get help for their loved one before they disappeared. That's a very common feeling and often part of the grieving process. Debbie's family has struggled with feelings of guilt as well.
We all struggle with different layers of guilt because, you know, we've all kind of had different levels of involvement with her. But we all know that we made the right decisions for ourselves. And I don't think any of us would change that. But that doesn't mean that we don't love her and that we don't want her to be safe and happy and warm. So I do hope that if she's out there, she realizes or she sees the flyers. The 1-year anniversary is coming up this month, March 28th. And my aunts are going around and reposting flyers and just, they're going to write on there how much they love her and how much they want her to come home just in case she sees, because there is a possibility that she's out there.
So what happened to Deborah Puente on March 28th, 2017? Did she go to the ocean that night and was the victim of an accident? Was Debbie even the person who left her car there? Even though Debbie's car was also missing for about a week, we know that it was left there sometime after she left the bar around 11 p.m. and the following morning when it was ticketed at 6 a.m. Since Debbie didn't have a cell phone, we don't even have that information to look into. Why didn't her boyfriend do more to look for her? Why didn't he report her missing? Could she have gone home and something happened there? Or did she have a safe place that no one else knows about? Could Debbie be lost amongst the homeless? One thing that I wonder about are those 2 days that Debbie had scheduled off right after her disappearance. Was she planning on going somewhere, possibly taking a trip to visit someone? Or did she schedule off to have some personal time? Ashley told me that she goes back and forth about what may have happened to her mom.
I flip back and forth. I feel very strongly that she tried to go down the stairs and she slipped and she drowned and her body is caught in the rocks somewhere and hasn't been found. That just seems the most realistic to me. But there's also, like I said, the mental health aspect is so strong here that a part of me does think that she could be out there suffering some kind of mental break, and she's in a position where she's like, you know, I've screwed up so much and
you know, and at this point, it's been a year now, and, you know, who knows what she is aware of and not, but you reach a point where you've made so many mistakes in your life, and you're 50 years old, and your kids aren't really talking to you, and your family's cut you out, and, you know, maybe it's better to just go this way. I think that's definitely possible, and really heartbreaking to me, because we do want to do the work with her if she's out there and she, you know, needs help. And I think this has been a really terrible wake-up call for a lot of us, but we want to do the work if she does.
If Debbie is still out there, there's a possibility that she's afraid to come forward because of the attention that her case has received. She may be worried about having to explain herself to those who have been worried and desperately searching for her. Ashley wants her mom to know that there is help available if she's out there and decides to come back.
There is a possibility that she's out there and, you know, she doesn't want to come home because it's going to be hard and people are, you know, she's worried people are going to be mad or people are going to be disappointed or, you know, she's not going to be able to get her job back. She had amazing insurance through her job, and they told us when they found out, you know, that she'd been struggling with an alcohol addiction, they told us she has amazing insurance. We will get her help. If we find her, we will get her the help that she needs. It will be covered. And so, you know, those are things that I don't think if she's out there that she realizes, but we're willing to do the work too, and we have the resources to do it. And we want her to be healthy and happy and safe. My aunt is friends with someone who works there too. And, you know, they've posted Facebook comments too. And it's just like, especially at the beginning, I'm sure that her desk is taken now. But at the beginning, you know, her desk was empty. And everyone was just heartbroken walking past her desk and just really concerned and scared. And as time went on, you know, just she was there for 15 years, and I think a lot of other people have been there a long time too, so they were devastated. I did promise my aunts and my mom's best friend from childhood that I would really reiterate how much she's loved and just how much we want her to be safe. And I think they share those fears that we were talking about earlier, that she just kind of thinks she, you know, she messed up too much and she can't come back. And we just want to make sure that if she's out there, she knows that that's not true.
If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Deborah Puente, please contact the San Diego Police Department at 619-531-2277. At the time of Debbie's disappearance, she was described as 5'4" tall, weighing approximately 115 pounds with brown hair and blue eyes. You can follow Debbie's case on Facebook at Help Find Deborah Puente. That brings us to the end of episode 119. I'd like to thank Ashley for taking the time to speak with me. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from Nova Scotia. Thanks for listening.
When I bought my house out here in Colorado 2 years ago and I called her on the phone to tell her about it, she asked me for my address and she laughed and said, who knows, maybe one day I'll just show up. And I laughed kind of uncomfortably, you know, because we had this strained relationship, and I'm like, oh God, I really hope my mom doesn't just show up on my door. But now that's like all that I think about is maybe she's just doing this cross-country sort of trip, just hitchhiking, hanging out, and maybe she'll end up in Fort Collins, Colorado on my doorstep. So I'm just sort of hoping that that's what she's doing, but who knows.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.